Hello everyone and welcome to this new session of MEMCast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Dr. Shingai Papereke, one of our nephrology consultants here in Leicester, and we're going to discuss IgA vasculitis today. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Christina. Kind introduction.
So, talking about IgA vasculitis, we're going to start off with a clinical case, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
So we're going to talk about a 25-year-old woman that presents feeling generally unwell, having had diarrhea and vomiting for the past 3 days, with abdominal pain and a rash that's affecting her legs. She's seen in the emergency department by the surgical team, and her a CT abdomen is performed to rule out appendicitis, which comes back clear. On further questioning, she reports a recent upper respiratory tract infection, some joint pains, and loss of appetite. Her blood tests come back with an eGFR of 60, creatinine of 180, an HB of 90, and Weiser count of 3. CRP is 150. Her urine tip shows hemoproteinuria. So, Shingai, how would you investigate this patient further?
Okay, so thank you, Christina, for the case. A very interesting case. And I'm sure you'd all agree the patient has got a number of differentials, including infection, and they've kindly and rightfully ruled out a surgical differential with a clear CT. But looking more into the history, this is a multisystemic presentation with features of AKI and an active urine sediment. So it becomes a bit more concerning due to the fact that it is quite suggestive of a systemic vasculitis. So, how then would we investigate this patient further? So a short answer to your question, without really going into it, because I know we'll take a bit more time to go into it for the rest of the podcast. I think in addition to what they've done, because they've clearly done the basic biochemistry and also some imaging, I think it would be useful at this point to have a renal immunology panel. I think that will be the next set of tests that will be useful, and perhaps running a referral to the nephrology team at this stage would be the right thing to do.
Okay, so sending the immunology panel and asking renal for review. And as a renal consultant, can you tell us more about what's on your top list of differential? And we're going to focus only on IgA vasculitis today.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that being the focus, that is my main differential. I think the thing that gives this away is really the rash. So this actually takes the form of the typical presentation of somebody who would come with IgA vasculitis, which is also referred to or previously known as Henoch-Schönlein purpura. So they're actually presenting with a combination of symptoms, which are essentially a rash which is affecting the legs, and then also a renal function impairment with evidence of active urine, and there is also some abdominal pain there, and some history of some joint pains. I think that is all quite typical of IgA vasculitis or Henoch-Schönlein purpura. So that would be my top differential. The other things to consider would be other types of vasculitis, such as small vessel vasculitis like ANCA vasculitis. That's another thing to consider as well with this particular presentation. I think those would be my main presentations, mainly because of the renal function impairment and also the active urine in addition to multisystemic symptoms.
Okay, good. So should we talk about IgA vasculitis in detail? So what is IgA vasculitis?
Sure. So I'll start off by just defining vasculitis in general. Vasculitis largely encompasses a wide range of diseases underpinned by autoimmune driven inflammation of the blood vessels. And broadly, we classify vasculitis according to the size of the blood vessels affected, either small, medium, or large vessel vasculitis. So for the purposes of this talk, we will focus on small vessel vasculitis, mainly focusing on the IgA vasculitis. IgA vasculitis is the most common form of vasculitis in children. The majority of cases occurring in the pediatric age group, typically between the ages of 3 and 17. While it's more prevalent in children, data from observational studies has shown that up to 20 or sometimes 30% of patients with IgA vasculitis are actually adults. So in these cohorts, adults have shown to have worse kidney outcomes when compared to children, but I'll talk a bit more about outcomes later on when we speak about the condition in general. So as I say, it is an immune-mediated small vessel vasculitis, which comes about due to a type 3 immune complex mediated hypersensitivity reaction, which is quite commonly to a trigger. So if you want to break this down, the basic pathophysiology around it is described by three main steps. The first step being an antigen trigger, which is either things like infection, drugs or toxins. And certainly in our case, the patient had described a recent infection, a recent upper respiratory tract infection, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So this antigenic stimulus would trigger IgA antibody production. So that would be the first step. The second step is IgA antibody immune complexes will deposit in the vascular walls and stimulate complement activation. And the third step really describes a bit more of step number two, which goes into a bit more detail of what the immune complex deposition actually is. So the immune complex deposition would cause inflammation and vessel necrosis, which eventually leads to the organ-specific symptoms. So deposition in the kidneys is usually in the mesangium and also in the vessel walls, and it essentially leads to mild to severe proliferative crescentic glomerulonephritis. You can get deposition in the gastrointestinal tract, which typically results in the presentation of abdominal pain, and also deposition in the skin is what leads to the rash presentation. So those are the three main steps in describing the pathophysiology of IgA vasculitis.
So coming from the pathophysiology, how does IgA vasculitis present and what are the symptoms?
Sure. So the classic symptoms of IgA vasculitis develop over days or sometimes weeks. And actually, approximately half of the cases are preceded by an infection of some sort. So the things to look out for if you're taking a history, if you're tracking a patient who you are suspecting a multisystemic condition, is to ask about previous infections, and also things like vaccinations. Sometimes if they've been to anywhere, things like insect bites, they've also been implicated as potential triggers. It's interesting actually that with the infections, it's usually streptococcal type infections that have been associated with IgA vasculitis. So for a typical patient will present with the four main symptoms that I mentioned earlier, and I'll just explain them a little bit more. So the most common symptom that you find if you, let's say, Google IgA vasculitis is the picture of a rash. So the rash is described as a palpable purpura. And this actually occurs with patients who are neither thrombocytopenic or have any coagulopathy. It is a rash which often begins with erythematous, macular or urticarial wheals, but also can have the less typical presentations such as targetoid lesions. So it can be itchy, but rarely is it painful. So the rash typically appears in bits and then it is symmetrically distributed and primarily located in gravity-dependent areas such as the backs of the legs and also the buttocks, often involved. And as I had explained before, usually the driver of this rash is IgA antibody immune complex deposits within the skin, and it eventually leads to a petechial palpable purpura. So the other presentation would be with joint complaints, so arthralgia. It's quite uncommon actually as a sole symptom at presentation, but it can happen approximately 15% of the patients. And the arthralgia is usually transient or sometimes migratory and typically affecting 1 to 4 joints. Another feature of the presentation is the abdominal pain. So gastrointestinal symptoms typically develop within days of appearance of the rash. And having said that, actually, when I mentioned the rash, I neglected to mention that it's not everybody who will present with a rash. Some people will not present with a rash. But in those who have a rash, it's quite commonly associated with abdominal pain. So the gastrointestinal symptoms will develop within days of appearance of the rash. It's typically a colicky pain occurring in approximately maybe half of the patients. And this is associated with, again, IgA antibody immune complex deposits within the submucosal gastrointestinal tract. So the lesions, well, in studies which have looked at endoscopy in these patients, have seen purpuric lesions commonly in the descending duodenum, also in the stomach and in the colon. And the terminal ileum sometimes may be involved as well. So other features that have been seen on endoscopy are submucosal edema, ulceration, and these kind of things have led to spasm of the intestines, which presents with a colicky gastrointestinal pain. And then when it comes to the other part of the presentation, which is the kidney involvement, The most common presentation is either blood or protein in the urine dip. So it's very important to get a urine dip in these patients. Sometimes they can be quite significant proteinuria, which can be nephrotic range. And then they can also have an elevated serum creatinine and sometimes hypertension as well. So when you get elevated serum creatinine and hypertension with coexisting blood and protein, these features are associated with an increased risk of progressive disease. And these features actually commonly occur more in the adults than the children. And we'll talk a bit more about findings on kidney biopsy a bit later on, but some of the risk factors predicting kidney involvement are not really well known. So those are really the main things that will be the presenting features in a patient with IgA vasculitis.
Great, thank you. And you hinted on investigations and how would we investigate a patient with IgA vasculitis or HSP?
Sure. So a patient whom we suspect would investigate as we would work up any patient presenting with, let's say, an AKI or a multisystemic illness. So there are no specific lab tests that are diagnostic for IgA vasculitis. So we would proceed to do the standard team lab tests. So when we look at, for example, full blood counts, coagulation profiles, renal profiles, so when we look at those things, largely they should be normal unless they've got acute kidney injury. But things such as the coagulation studies are largely normal. Elevated creatinine indicates a significant renal involvement, and sometimes they may have electrolyte abnormalities as well. When we look at the inflammatory markers, they may be raised, but sometimes they are not. Earlier on, I mentioned a renal immunology panel, so it's quite important to include an autoantibody screen, which is ANAs, ANCA antibodies, complement levels, immunoglobulins. And again, these are typically negative, but it's very important to do them because it helps us to differentiate from other differentials, such as other vasculitides like ANCA-associated vasculitis and anti-glomerular basement membrane, ETC.
Yeah, and people often ask because in the renal panel there's immunoglobulin screen as well and electrophoresis, and they wonder whether a high serum IgA level would be more indicative of HSP or not.
So it's interesting, yes. There's a lot of attention actually with this, and it's actually not really a diagnostic element. So we may sometimes see elevations of serum IgA, but again, it's not a diagnostic element, and in some people it may not be elevated. Immunoglobulin panels are largely normal, actually, in people with IgA vasculitis.
Perfect, thank you. Now to the renal involvement, and would you mind talking us through about what the kidney biopsy would show in a patient with IgA vasculitis?
Sure. So kidney biopsy, thank you for mentioning that. It is the gold standard for diagnosis, but actually, depending on the presentation, quite often we don't do a kidney biopsy. And I know I mentioned earlier on that involve us, refer to nephrology early, is because we want to keep a close eye on these patients. We don't biopsy everybody. If the clinical picture is typical, and this is often the case in children, if the clinical picture is typical, we don't do a kidney biopsy and the diagnosis is purely clinical. But confirmation of the diagnosis by biopsy is more important, usually in adult patients or even in children where perhaps the clinical picture is not so clear. And in adult patients, it's more important because there is a lower incidence of IgA vasculitis and comparatively a higher incidence of other forms of vasculitis, such as the ANCA-associated vasculitis. And so this is where it's more important to do a kidney biopsy. So the other reason why it's not usually done, particularly in children, is because IgA vasculitis is often self-limiting, and I'll talk a bit more about this when we reach the management, but it is often self-limiting, so actually we wouldn't do an investigation which has risks and yet actually would not impact on the management. So we usually reserve it for people who we think the diagnosis is doubtful, or people who've got clinical evidence of severe renal impairment or a picture of rapidly progressive glomerular nephritis, where we think perhaps the management would be impacted by immunosuppression, for example. So if we do proceed and do a kidney biopsy, the typical findings would be IgA deposition in the mesangium. And actually the clinical findings on the biopsy are very much similar to what we would find on IgA nephropathy. And the main difference, I might as well discuss it actually while we are here, because some of you may be wondering what is the difference actually. So is this IgA nephropathy? There is quite a lot of overlap with these two conditions. And you will find immunologic and histopathologic findings similar between the two. However, the main differences are that patients with IgA nephropathy do not have other clinical characteristics of IgA vasculitis, which are the more multisystemic features. Although the two entities, they share a similar pathogenesis, but with IgA vasculitis, you've got involvement of other systems, whereas with IgA nephropathy, it's purely renal involved. So the changes that you're probably going to see on the biopsy are mesangial proliferation, some hypercellularity. There might be some focal necrosis as well, and some segmental capillary collapse. And sometimes if it is severe, there might be some epithelial crescent formation, which is associated with more severe inflammatory damage. You also do get some immunofluorescence changes, which is deposition of the IgA complexes, and also other findings such as complement deposition as well.
Great, and thank you for clarifying the difference between IgA vasculitis and IgA nephropathy, with IgA nephropathy more commonly managed in nephrology and more often encountered. So because we clarified the investigations and obviously the diagnosis and the diagnostic criteria, can we move on to management, specifically focusing on renal involvement? So how would you manage a patient with IgA vasculitis in the renal department?
So IgA vasculitis management is largely dependent on the presentation. So as I had mentioned before, with children, it is always largely self-limiting. So we don't tend to do anything. We usually just monitor. So a lot of supportive care, which includes ensuring that they are well hydrated, the fluid status is appropriate, managing their blood pressure, and it usually runs its course. However, if it is more severe, and we usually see this more with adults, if there is element of rapidly progressive glomerular nephritis or rapidly deteriorating kidney function, then the KDIGO guidelines recommend immunosuppression. If it is in children, usually steroids are adequate, but if it is in adults, KDIGO recommends using the ANCA vasculitis protocol, which is going to be a combination of corticosteroids and cyclophosphamide for management of rapidly progressive glomerular nephritis.
We can talk a bit about monitoring briefly, and how would you monitor these patients in outpatients in clinics?
Sure. So given the fact that this is a largely self-limiting condition, we would want to monitor those patients who will either have persistent proteinuria, ongoing problems with hypertension, and ongoing renal impairment. So those are the patients who we would ask you to refer on to us, so we continue monitoring them. So we would monitor these patients with regular urinalysis, blood pressure monitoring, and we would largely support them in the same way that we would patients with IgA nephropathy. So just ensuring that their angiotensin receptor blockade is appropriate. And we would monitor any changes. If there is any suggestion, for example, any recurrence of IgA vasculitis, and then again, we would reevaluate starting from the beginning as we would have done at first presentation. So the short and long-term outcomes of children with IgA vasculitis are generally quite good. In the absence of any kidney disease, they typically get complete resolution. But then, as I mentioned, some patients will get recurrence. In some children, they will get recurrence typically within months of the initial presentation, but then largely they don't get recurrence. But when we look at adults, the long-term morbidity in patients with IgA vasculitis is usually the problem with the renal involvement. So there is a risk of chronic kidney disease, and this risk is increased with older patients and more adults. And the severity of the kidney involvement correlates with the severity of the initial presentation and also the histologic changes that were seen on the kidney biopsy. And some of the risk factors for worse prognosis include nephrotic range proteinuria and quite elevated serum creatinine and hypertension. And as I say, certain histologic findings, although it's important to mention that neither the MEST classification or the International IgM Prediction Tool have actually been validated in IgA vasculitis. So we can't quite use it as as a tool to dictate prognosis, but it usually can help to guide to decide the severity. So we keep an eye on these patients, and essentially we make a decision depending on whether or not they get recurrence. They will be prone to chronic kidney disease if they had involvement at presentation, but we'll just monitor them, and generally the outcomes are fairly good.
Great, thank you so much, Shingai, for this wonderful talk. What are the take-home messages that you want the RMTs to get from this discussion?
Take-home messages, I think the main thing would be to be sure that we're considering IgA vasculitis and other small vessel vasculitis in patients who we see with multisystemic presentation. And so it's very important to be thorough in our history taking, because patients will sometimes not volunteer certain pieces of information. And we do have to go looking for it. We do have to specifically ask about the rashes. We have to ask about any weight loss, any joint involvement. We have to ask about any preceding potential triggers, such as any recent infections or any vaccinations. We have to seek for all those things because they do add to the clinical picture. So that's one important message to think about when we're seeing patients who have got multisystemic presentations. Another important take home is to always document a urine dipstick, especially in patients who are presenting with acute kidney injury. It is important to document a urine dipstick primarily before they're catheterized, because usually this will affect whether or not there's blood and protein, and we can truly interpret it as blood and protein. As you can tell, it does make a difference to how we are potentially going to manage them. So it's important to know whether or not the active sediment is glomerular origin, or if it is because of catheterization, then it does muddy the waters. So I'd say those are the main take-home messages. We would not rush to biopsy these patients. We would monitor them, and if there's evidence of rapid decline, then we would think about doing a biopsy, and this would help us to decide on their management.
That's great. Thank you so much, Shingai. Thank you again for joining us and taking time to teach the internal medical trainees and all our listeners. And thank you for joining us today, and join us again for a new episode.